Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry tuku ingoa, ko Maungaoika te maunga, ko Wairau te awa, ko Waitemata te whanga. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name is Julie Ferry. I'm one of five Roskill Community Voice reps on the Pukitāpapa Local Board of Auckland Council. And I'm part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau. I have a monthly spot here on Red Alert Radio, and I'm very keen to get your feedback. You can find me pretty easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry. That's spelled F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. Bit of a strange one, so that makes me easy to find, which is nice. We also now have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. If you search for Red Alert Radio AKL, you should find us pretty easily. We put up links to our shows online once they're up as podcasts, as well as other bits of useful news relevant to the topics we cover. You can get all our past shows on the Red Alert Radio archive on planetaudio.org.nz. And today I'm talking with Anna Metcalf, who is in her day job a teacher at Marsalin College, but today is in fact here wearing an imaginary flowery purple bonnet as a National Council of Women of NZ board member. The National Council of Women is the peak body for women in Aotearoa, and Anna's role is part of the strategic governance of this important organisation, which has been around since 1896. 3 years after women won the right to vote, or Pākehā women won the right to vote. In recent years, the National Council of Women, which is also known as NCWNZ or NCW for super short, has significantly changed its focus and direction to shift from being relatively internally and also internationally focused to put at the centre of their work a national campaign called Gender Equal NZ. At their 2018 conference, which was recently hosted in Auckland, Helen Clark became the organisation's patron. Sessions looked at the impact of toxic masculinity and the importance of transgender rights, and feminism was a central theme. This is a big change from not too long ago, when National Council of Women was seen as quite conservative and often did not submit on legislation around key human rights issues like marriage equality. As a past president of the Auckland branch myself, and long-time listeners will remember we've had Carol Beaumont, who is now in that role, in as well, it's been really encouraging to be part of the evolution of NCW, and it's lovely to have Anna here today.
Kia ora, Julie. I'm excited about maybe having a Christmas present idea for you now, which I'm thinking is a flowery purple bonnet.
Okay, well, you can measure my head when we're finished to make sure you get it right size. I have an unusually large head, apparently. So just to put that out there on record for anybody who's thinking of getting me a Christmas present that involves my head. Now, first up, if you could tell us a bit more about your role with National Council of Women NZ. What is the national board of the organisation, and what's your role on that?
So the national board of the organisation is exactly what you said. It provides a strategic governance for the organisation, strategic direction. It also is a more recent part of the organisation, because we've made a move in the last few years to a governance board as opposed to a board of management, which is a bit of a dry distinction, but it's quite different in that the board of management had a much more hands-on
sort of operational
role, whereas now the board of governance has a much more sort of above in the sky helicopter large overview, which I think is really helpful for such a large organisation with so many interactions.
Yeah,
so many interactions, and it's also, as the peak body for the New Zealand women, it's really important that we do keep an eye on like really broad issues and themes that are coming through. And I think in an operational way, that's difficult to do, but with a governance, strategic governance role, that's more important that we keep an eye on those trends, so we can really reflect and focus what women in New Zealand are thinking and feeling, and we can respond to the climate and the changes that are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my perception as sort of an active member, I guess now, is that the organisation was going through a period where actually most of what it was doing was about its survival, and now it's sort of shifted into that phase of, okay, we've survived, what's the purpose we've survived to achieve and how are we going to get there sort of approach.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing that has happened, because the organisation, like many volunteer organisations or like many large membership-based organisations, most of the groups that make up our organisation are mostly volunteer-based.
Yeah.
And so when the Charities Commission changes came in, and I can't remember exactly what year that was, we lost our charity status.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the organisation's efforts, which had been outwardly focused, had been focused on making really tight submissions to government, making sure we were canvassing members to inform any sort of policies that we had, that sort of got put on the back burner a little bit while we had to go through the High Court process to get our charity status back.
Yeah.
So
because it was just such a big blow to the funding.
It was such a huge blow to the funding. So it wasn't just that we lost any of the ministry funding that we did have as a not-for-profit. What did happen was we lost access to a lot of places where we could have got grants, and we could have got funding. And so that meant that we had to spend so many years trying to get that back to regain our position that we had. And now I think we're sort of just in the beginning of the rebuilding phase, even though it's been a few years since we got it back. It was such a significant change. We lost all our office staff.
Yeah.
It was just, it decimated the organisation.
And very hard, you talked before about the previous board of management being quite operational, very hard to shift to a strategic or governance role when you've also lost your staff because you can't afford them anymore.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the reasons that it took a while to go towards having a board of governance, was because it had to be a board of management. And I've been in similar board roles where there has been not even a lack of clarity, but because of the nature of the history of the organisation, that while a board member may be a board member and have a governance role, actually they're still on the ground doing some volunteer aspects. So, for example, when I was with the Auckland Plunkett Board, that was very similar. And so many of your listeners will have a familiarity with Plunkett.
Yeah, and play centre, those kinds of places.
Those kind of places where you're not just on the board, you're also a member, a volunteer, you also have a history with the organisation.
Yeah.
But also it was a case of the staff and the volunteers often interacted to quite a high level.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the case. So I see similarities there with National Council of Women. Yeah. And I mean, incidentally, Plunkett is one of our members.
Yeah, that's right. And the Place Centre Association as well. Yeah. So how did you personally first become involved? And now you're at the lofty heights of being a board member. But how did it start for Anna?
For me, in the third person, I used to be quite active in the Labour Party women's sector.
Yeah.
So I came through in quite a strange way, in that the president of the Labour Women's Caucus at the time was not able to attend the National Organised Society's conference. So the representative of my group could not go. And as a 21-year-old, I put my hand up.
To go in her place.
To go in her place. Said, oh, I'll give it a go. What's this National Council of Women?
Yeah.
And actually people were surprised that I wanted to go because it did have a reputation at that time. So that is sort of 17 years ago for being old-fashioned, conservative, a little bit stodgy, a little bit blue rinse and pearls.
Yeah.
So the appeal to a 21-year-old was not obvious.
Right.
But when I got there, one of the things that amazed me was just the sheer quantity of amazing women in the room. And I remember sitting, it was in a plenary style with big board tables facing the front of the room, and within 10 metres of me I had five dames.
Yeah.
And I was just stunned by just the history of the organisation and all the amazing things that the woman around me had accomplished, and just how many, I've always loved spending time with older women for just their experience and their knowledge and their humour.
Yeah.
And so it felt like a really comfortable environment for me.
Great. And while it's still blue rinse and pearls, it's also lots of other things now as well, which is I think quite important to represent the diversity of women in New Zealand, and that's certainly been some of the change that has happened and the change that is still to happen as well.
Well, I think if you're an organisation who are saying, as we are, that we're the peak body for New Zealand women, then it's it's incumbent on us to make sure that all the women's voices are at the table.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not a genuine thing to be saying. So we do have, I think we've got about 45 national organisations at the moment, and we do accept like individual members at national and a branch level. But I think one of the key things that I would say is that I've had a number of meetings with a range of, particularly women's ethnic groups,
yep.
women who are interested in becoming involved and bringing the organisations with them.
Yeah.
But also our three of our most recent national new memberships have been Women's March Aotearoa,
yeah.
Which is a pretty new movement. It's not yeah. a historical organisation. Taiwanese Women's Association.
Yeah.
And the Chinese Women's Association.
Yeah.
So I think that the breadth yep. of I suppose new movements and also new groups to New Zealand
yeah.
is really pleasing, and I'd like to see that trend to continue, and I can imagine it will.
It's interesting because in my community in Mount Roskill, you know, we've the most diverse community in New Zealand, possibly in the Southern Hemisphere. You know, I'm 50% born outside New Zealand, and
woohoo!
Yeah,
it's cool.
It is. It's fantastic. It's a real strength.
Mm.
And my perception is that some of those migrant communities are now sort of are at a point where they feel secure enough in their own, you know, it's been about survival. Then it's been about how do we maintain and protect our culture for ourselves and for our children.
Mm.
And now some of them are moving into that phase where they are able to look outside. It's beyond survival, first for themselves as individuals and then for themselves as a culture, to how do we collaborate, how do we interact, how do we get our mm. voices and our perspectives into the broader conversation.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, I mean, it's interesting you say that the Chinese Women's Association, because of course Chinese have been here almost as long as Pākehā
mm.
and certainly not as long as Māori. So,
yeah,
you know, but their integration in society has been quite different, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, my understanding is that there are different tensions within the different immigrant communities around the people who had come here a very long time ago and people yeah. who are more recent.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not able to really comment on that, except that I'm aware that sometimes there's a tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I think that does sound quite reasonable. And I think the other thing is, you know, that National Council of Women has a lot of historical organisations such as, and I'm sorry if I'm excluding anyone by just picking a few out of the hat, but we've got, for example, like YWCA, Girl Guides. You know, they're not new organisations. We've got church organisations such as Methodist Women.
Yeah, they go back over 100 years.
They go back over 100 years. And actually, I was really lucky. I got to attend the celebration of one of our members, which is the Pan Pacific Southeast Asian Women's Association.
Yeah, known as PASIWA.
PASIWA. And I had some understanding of this organisation, but I didn't realise they were actually celebrating their centenary.
Wow.
Their international yeah. centenary. So it's, some of the organisations sound like they could be newer,
yeah.
but they're older.
Yeah.
And I think the glory is that there is such a range of people
yeah.
who come together.
Yeah, it's a real opportunity then too. So this year, sort of mentioned this, I think, has been the year, the 125th anniversary of Pākehā women gaining the right to vote, which is commonly known as women's suffrage. And how do you think this year has gone? Because it's been a big year for National Council of Women. And I've got the little 125 badge on my jacket today. There's been lots of events, publications. The National Council of Women Conference had a special day that was, you know, all about how far have we come. The Auckland Museum's got the Are We There Yet exhibition, which I'd encourage everyone to go and have a look at if they haven't already. I think it closes in about February or March.
Yeah, it's a really good exhibition.
It's great. So how have you sort of felt from a National Council of Women perspective about the 125 suffrage?
One of the things that I found was fascinating about how it was set up by the Ministry for Women this year was what they did was they sort of canvassed. They had a fund to give out for projects.
Yeah.
They also had a register of events that were themed, suffrage 125.
Yeah.
And what I found really fascinating this year was the sheer range of areas where suffrage has been celebrated. So not just geographic areas, but, you know, there was, I think it was the APO.
Yeah.
Had a suffrage event.
Right.
You know, different galleries and museums
yeah.
have been putting on suffrage events. It's been spread out through the creative communities, and it's been picked up at like very, very sort of granular, even like local level.
Yeah.
With small celebrations. I know there was one down the road from me in Onehunga, celebrating the first mayor.
Yeah, Elizabeth Yates.
Yeah.
First female mayor of the British Empire, I think it was then, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
back in the olden days.
Yeah, we had quite a few firsts, eh?
Yeah,
mm.
Yeah. So one thing I noticed, it was a small provincial museum, probably not that small, I've lived in Auckland all my life, sorry listeners, which had, they had a specific exhibition on suffrage and what had happened in their area. But they also had with their permanent exhibitions, deliberately put a bit into each one that talked about the role of women.
Mm.
Because so often with that, the way that we've, you know, we've, the way that we've reported history has been about the public sphere and has been about men's lives. And they had actually sort of gone and addressed that imbalance by quite specifically going through and making sure there was a panel for each of those permanent exhibitions that spoke directly to the role of women.
I think one of the things that I really appreciated was actually there seems to be a lot of community ownership.
Yeah.
Or a lot of people being empowered to celebrate Suffrage 125. And, you know, there was a hashtag and a social media branding and, you know, the little pins that the Ministry for Women did, things like that. But the key thing for me has been that just the ownership of it and also the some of the media around it, you know, like the special editions of magazines like Mind Food or the...
Yeah.
When I think Jacinda edited the Herald one day.
Yeah, that was on Suffrage Day.
On she Suffrage did a special Day. Edition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, she also opened our Sunrise Celebration.
So yes, for National Council of Women. Yeah.
Yeah, for National Council of Women in Auckland, we had the big, we do it in collaboration with Auckland Council, and they pulled out all the stops this year, and we had such a good event.
Great.
And, you know, the level of resourcing and the value placed on celebrating suffrage has been quite high.
It's been seen as important.
Yeah. And I sort of, I think that's really interesting as well because of the timing of sort of the international movements, you know, so the women's marches and the Me Too movements. And so in New Zealand, we get to celebrate, even though there are still things to be addressed that are currently being addressed, we do get to stop and celebrate and say, actually, it used to be
worse.
So it's lovely to be able to stop and celebrate instead of always thinking, okay, what's the next battle or what's the next issue or who's being marginalised?
Yeah.
Then we get to say, actually, we're coming together and we're saying, yeah, we did good.
And it's that hope that it gives you too, that you can make change because you've made change in the past.
Yeah.
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 So what are, let's I guess, talk to that a little bit more in terms of the biggest challenges that National Council of Women has identified. And I'm aware that the Gender Equal NZ campaign is the big thing that National Council of Women is working on at the moment. Do you maybe want to explain a bit more about that? Because Gender Equal NZ doesn't even have the word woman in it. What's that about? I know.
Obviously, it's disgraceful. But the point of Gender Equal NZ was twofold. As you know, in terms of me framing it for this discussion, I think it was part of the reframing and refocusing of National Council of Women coming out of the whole Charities Commission stuff, that something needed to happen to make sure that the organisation had a voice and was relevant.
Yeah.
Also, there was a huge gap in terms of research around attitudes towards gender.
Yeah.
In New Zealand, no one had done any research around that of any particular scale. So the way we're sort of looking at Gender Equal NZ is it's a campaign to achieve gender equality in New Zealand, and it's inclusive in that, you know, it's not men and women, it's all genders.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of, you know, you can't say we're working for women and not work for all women.
Yeah.
And you can't say, you know, we want the situation to be better for women, when actually patriarchy damages men equally.
Hmm.
You know, and in some ways, measurable ways, have men have more negative outcomes because of it. The way we set up society and treat men and boys.
Yeah, like prison, incarceration, thinking about life expectancy. You know, men are much more likely to die at work than women are. You know, there's a whole lot of stats on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's not just about fighting for women need XYZ. It's actually reframing the discussion. So it's not about how many individual women do we have on boards,
yep,
but pulling back, looking at a wider a wider societal issue, which is the having women on boards is symptomatic of a problem.
Yeah.
It's not the problem in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah. And so, getting more women on boards doesn't solve the problem. It's a cultural shift.
Yeah, so I'm using the women on boards as, you know, just as a proxy for, you know, things that seem important but actually are kind of, they're almost a red herring.
It's a little bit like having women read the news. You know, it's not that long ago that it was considered quite bizarre that, you know, a woman would not be authoritative enough to read the news.
Mm.
Now we have, you know, heaps of women read the news. That's fine. On the TV, I mean.
But not over 50.
No, not over 50. And also, they get, the only feedback they get is about their appearance.
Yeah, I have to say, I was...
So we put women in to read the news, but it didn't actually solve the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think one of the... I remember seeing a presentation done by Judy McGregor years ago where she used the phrase, if you can measure it, you can change it.
Yeah.
And I've always remembered that because I think that's also the biggest deal around the Gender Equal New Zealand work, is that there was a statistically significant, robust process that we went through with a research firm. And we did, you know, a statistically significant survey of 1,000 New Zealanders and got their gender attitudes based on a range of questions. And so that's accessible. Those results are accessible on the Gender Equal NZ website. And that benchmarking is now there. So we know, we have a snapshot in a point of time, this is what men and women in New Zealand thought about how men and women act and should be treated.
Yeah.
And so now we can measure against that and see if we shift things. So the whole point of the Gender Equal campaign is to have a Gender Equal New Zealand, and we need to work around that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the big things that I've noticed as a priority for the Gender Equal NZ campaign, and certainly it was talked about quite a bit at the National Council of Women conference, which feels like it was a long time ago now, but I think it was just in September.
Mm.
Yeah, late September, was toxic masculinity. And again, National Council of Women, women's organisation, why are you talking about toxic masculinity?
Well, out of the Gender Equal research, there were some major themes. And one of the largest themes that we thought we'd tackle first was the issue of how are men learning how to be men?
Yeah.
Where are they getting their role modelling, and what is affecting them at the moment? What is turning young, beautiful boys into men who, you know, have less than awesome respect for women, or who are not feeling good enough as teenagers, or, you know, whatever is happening to them, it is causing them to not treat women particularly well or have some attitudes that are problematic.
Yeah.
And one of the really interesting things out of the research was that some of the younger men, the younger demographic of men, had much more conservative views around women's roles than some of the older men.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was also some research in Australia that I can't think of the research link, but there was some really interesting research that came out, I think, of Melbourne University.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
RMIT, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was interesting in that they had been linking percentage of time spent on social media and video games to attitudes towards women.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, you don't try and fix an issue by focusing on the people who are suffering necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, you know, you've got to prioritize people who are having difficulties, you know, like some women in society, not all, because there's a difference, but I think you fix an issue by dealing with the people who are, you know, also causing it a little bit.
It's a little bit like that newsreader analogy I was using before, is that, you know, having women reading the news, they're now getting this abuse. Changing those women is, you know, not going to actually diminish the abuse.
Mm.
It's actually about the attitudes of the people who are sending the abuse.
Yeah.
And that sense of entitlement to comment, and that sense of public ownership of women's bodies, and that sense that actually it's okay if I tell a woman she should, you know, who I don't know, who is a complete stranger, that I don't like her haircut.
Yeah, I think because that's why the first part of the sort of not like the outreach work that came from the Gender Equal campaign, which has been headed up by Sandra Dixon and the team at head office, they do such a good job. was the good guys. So there was a little video released, there was some collateral produced, some timelines and key pieces of research, and it is about focusing on the guys who are doing good.
Yeah.
And all the male champions who are just brilliant.
Yeah, so there's another way to be male.
Yeah.
You don't have to be male in a way that's toxic.
Yeah.
You can be male in a whole range of different ways. There's a suite of options. You can mix and match.
Yeah.
You might even not want to be male.
Yeah, column A, column B, have a bit of that, have a bit of this. And I think that to me, as someone, because I work with teenagers, that's my day job, you know, I look at them, and I've worked in a number of schools over a number of years, and there's often guys, teenage boys, who just don't quite know where they fit.
Yeah.
And that's not an uncommon teenage thing, but they don't quite know where they fit, and their behaviour becomes problematic partly because they don't know, they're not comfortable in and of themselves.
Yeah.
And part of that is, who is teaching them to be men?
Yeah.
That's always my question. How are they getting the information they need and the guidance they need to be confident, to be healthy, in and of themselves and around other people?
Yeah. And listeners, this is probably particularly pertinent for Anna and I, because between us we have five sons.
You can never have too many boys.
No. So, you know, raising good sons, and sons who will respect women, and not just their mothers, but all women.
Always their mothers, though.
Yes, yes. Question authority, but not your mother, I tell my children regularly.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work. But anyway, so we're sort of coming up to the end now, but talking a bit more about the Gender Equal NZ campaign, how can people get involved in that?
Well, we welcome members, so anyone can join the Gender Equal campaign.
Yeah.
Even though we created the campaign and we kind of have it, we hold it at the moment, mm-hmm. what we really want people to do is to be able to own it.
Yeah.
So we almost want to do the same thing that the Suffrage 125 campaign achieved this year, which is to enable communities and groups to be able to change the world around them.
Yeah.
Using some of the information that we can provide. So there's the genderequal.nz is the website.
We'll put a link up to that on the Facebook page too.
Yeah. So there's that. I mean, one of the things that I've been finding really helpful on an individual level is I have some of the postcards, or I have some of the information in my bag, and don't listen if you're my students. But if I'm at the pub...
Yeah,
and I'm.
Anna doesn't have anything alcoholic at the pub. Of course, she just has a lemon lime and bitters.
That's exactly what I have at the pub.
Yeah,
not pale ale. Never.
No. Okay.
No. Yeah. I will have one-on-one conversations with guys who are around me.
Yeah,
and actually just have a chat.
Yeah,
you know, and once we're in the conversation, they say, "Oh, but did you know X, Y, Z?" And they go, "Oh,
yeah,
that's interesting."
Yeah.
You know, so it is about changing the world. And I know that some of the social media work that's been really, really possible has been because we have about 15 volunteers who engage in conversations on the Gender Equal NZ Facebook page.
Yeah.
And so you can always pop over to the Facebook page and be part of the conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that's the really valuable thing, because it's not about telling people what they're doing is wrong. It's about sharing information, having a conversation and talking about possibilities.
Yeah.
So, you know, what would it look like if women could do X, Y, Z? Or what would it look like if boys could comfortably go off and be nurses? Or, you know, because I think we're really good at saying women can do everything, and then women end up doing everything.
Yeah.
But we're also...
buying all the Christmas presents, top of mind at the moment.
Yeah. But we're also not so good at saying boys and men can do everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's like opening up the spaces for men to be gentle and to go into caring professions.
And to cry.
And to have a cry, you know, and things like that. That's the best way. So I think it's having the one-on-one conversations, and that's quite difficult.
Going to have to end now. Thanks, Anna.
Kia ora.
There's a really great article in the Sunday magazine about this too, called Boy Power. Thanks so much, Anna, for coming in today. Thanks for listening, folks. And love to hear your feedback on Twitter or Facebook. A reminder that you can listen again to this interview or any of our back catalogue via the Planet FM website, planetaudio.org.nz. If you check out programs, we're under R. You have to scroll down a bit. Thanks a lot. Ka kite anō.
Get together next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.